earth is the Lord's and everything in it. Psalm 24, verse 1. He changes times and seasons. He deposes kings and raises up others. Daniel. Book 2, verse 21. What do those even mean? How do they apply to your life, if they even do? That's what we'll explore today. Welcome to the Sunday service. Are you familiar with land acknowledgments? Is this something that you've been a part of, that you've heard, that you do? It's an interesting, it feels like a recent phenomenon to me. But a land acknowledgement, it's a formal statement that recognizes indigenous peoples as the original inhabitants of land, of an area. It can be spoken or written and is often made at the beginning of public events. That's how I've come to understand them and experience them, are statements that are made before something kicks off, before some kind of an event. And it's an interesting thing. I think everything's interesting. I think that human behavior is very interesting, their motivations for doing things, why it is we do certain things, why we choose to make statements like that. But it's made me wonder. I thought, well, how common is it for a patch of dirt to change hands? How common is that? Obviously, here in the United States, we are buying and selling real estate every minute of every day. It's changing hands. But what about a city or a country? How often do the people who held on to it at one point, how often is that changing over? So I was curious about that. So I did some research and I wanted to share it with you. And probably not going to be surprised that one of the most contested pieces of land in the history of human history, and certainly on earth, is Jerusalem, particularly Old City of Jerusalem. And that's changed hands dozens of times due to religious, cultural, strategic significance. Various empires and kingdoms and states have ruled over it, including but not limited to the ancient Egyptians, the Canaanites, the Israelites, the Babylonians, the Persians, Alexander the Great, the Greeks, Romans, the Byzantines, the Islamic Caliphates, the Crusaders, the Ayyubids, the Mamluks, the Ottomans, the British, obviously modern Israel, and certainly some contested areas going on right now. I don't know if you're familiar with that. Obviously, you are. So that's a top one, but another strong contender is a city called Strasbourg. It's a city on the French-German border. Over the centuries, it's repeatedly switched between France and Germany due to wars and treaties. Similarly, Alsace-Lorraine, the region where Strasbourg is located, changed hands multiple times in the Franco-Prussian War, World War I, World War II, various other conflicts. So this kind of shifting has been incredibly common throughout history. Borders are rarely, if ever, permanent. Regions that are strategically valuable due to trade routes, resources, mineral rights, religious significance, people want them. And so they change hands, sometimes non-violently, sometimes through extreme violence. But there are certainly patterns that you can find and look for across the world. There's always borderlines and buffer zones. These are regions that have historically been caught between powerful empires. Something called the Flanders. It's a hotspot that was in medieval European wars, Napoleonic conflicts, and both world wars. I mentioned the Alsace-Lorraine, switch between France and Germany. But Kashmir, it's a region of ongoing disputes and multiple wars between India, Pakistan, and China. There's trade hubs and ports, which are cities with access to important trade routes, change hands all the time. Constantinople, which is now Istanbul in Turkey, has been controlled by the Romans, the Byzantines, the Crusaders, and the Ottomans. Malacca, also known as Malaysia, was taken by the Portuguese, Dutch, British, and Japanese at different points. Hong Kong and Macau. I don't know if you're real aware of this one, but that's certainly a hot point controlled by European powers, Britain and Portugal, before going back to China. And obviously, Taiwan, currently is very contentious. And there's religious and cultural centers that I already talked about, like Jerusalem and Mecca and Medina. They've been subject to various Muslim dynasties, including the Ottomans and the Saudis. Rome has been conquered by various factions over time, the Visigoths, the Byzantines, later Italian states, colonial conquests and revolts. Tons of different territories and independence movements. The Caribbeans, many islands like St. Kitts and Nevis, switched between the British, French, Dutch, and Spanish. India was ruled by the Mughals, various European powers, British, French, Portuguese, later regaining its own independence. Africa itself, borders have been drawn and redrawn multiple times. So there's certainly cities and castles that have had high strategic value over the years, like Gibraltar, Belfort, areas of Ukraine. So territories are always in flux between wars, and treaties, and political shifts, and the redrawing of maps. So the idea of stable borders is a relatively new one. For the 20th century, it was expected that land could change rulers due to war dynastic claims. Today, shifts like that are rarer due to international law, but dispute still exists. Crimea, which is Ukraine and Russia, obviously. Taiwan, which I already talked about, and certainly in Western Sahara, there are a lot going on there. So then I'm curious about, just beyond the historical examples, what our major religions have to say about this. And I mean, fundamentally, the two Bible verses that I talked about go to the impermanence of human rule. It go to the fact or the idea, the belief that God owns everything. It's all God's, and we are human beings, are just temporary here. And everything that we build is certainly temporary as well. The Bible quotes that I talked about, Jesus, he avoided political entanglements, saying that my kingdom is not of this world, which suggests that while nations fight over land, a higher spiritual reality is more important. The just war theory that was promoted by Augustine and Aquinas argued that war over land could be justified under certain conditions, such as self-defense or restoring justice. Islam talks about stewardship of the earth and that land ultimately belongs to God and humans are just caretakers of it. From the Quran, saying that to Allah belongs the dominion of the heavens and the earth. Historically, Islam has teachings on defending or spreading Muslim rule, but also treaties and coexistence. And many Islamic scholars emphasize that earthly rule is just temporary and that true justice comes in the afterlife. Judaism believes in the idea of the promised land and hold that God gave the land of Israel to the Jewish people, but also that exile and foreign rule have been a major part of Jewish history. Hebrew Bible contains many warnings that land and power are not permanent if justice and righteousness are not maintained. Land must not be sold permanently because the land is mine and you reside in my land as foreigners and strangers, from Leviticus. Jewish prophets often criticize kings for unjust wars, emphasizing ethical behavior over territorial gains. In Hinduism, they talk about karma and cycles of rule, teaching that history moves in cycles where empires rise and fall due to karma, which is the consequences of our actions. The Bhagavad Gita on war and duty talks about and acknowledges that war over land sometimes happen, but emphasizes that dharma or duty over conquest for selfish reasons. So, back to justice. Krishna tells Arjuna, the wise see that there is nothing eternal in the material world. They take a stance of non-attachment to land, teaching that while people may fight over land, spiritual liberation, also known as moksha, is more important than earthly kingdoms. Buddhism puts a premium on impermanence and detachment, teaching that all things, including kingdoms and borders and land, are temporary. Buddha warned against attachments to material things, including certainly land. And while some Buddhist societies have engaged in war, core Buddhist teachings discourage fighting over land, saying that victory breeds hatred. The defeated live in pain. Happily, the peaceful live, giving up victory and defeat. So Taoism, the Tao, which is the way, is beyond borders, teaching that human struggles over land are misguided because they go against the natural flow of the universe. So I think that that's all very, very interesting and instructive. Certainly, there have been a lot of philosophers over the course of history that have weighed in on this as well. Heraclitus tells us that everything flows, believing that change is fundamental to the nature of the universe. He is the gentleman who said that no man steps in the same river twice, as he is a different man and it is a different river. So just suggesting that everything is always shifting and nothing is permanent. Plato was skeptical of land conquest for its own sake. In the Republic, he argued that the best rulers should be philosopher kings who prioritize justice over expansion, warning against excessive wealth and power leading to corruption and decline. Aristotle defended private property, but believed the land should be used for the good of society, not just personal gain, criticizing conquest-driven politics. St. Augustine talked about how political struggles, including war over land, are temporary compared to the eternal city of God. So along the same line of thinking. And this goes on and on. Moving on to the Enlightenment, you had Hobbes seeing and viewing land as a cause of conflict, believing that us humans are naturally competitive and territorial. He is the state of nature thinker. Talking about how life is nasty, brutish, and short. So arguing that land disputes would be constant without a strong government to enforce order. John Locke talked about land and natural rights, arguing that land belonged to those who cultivate it. He believed governments should protect property rights, but unjust rulers could be overthrown. His ideas influenced later democratic revolutions. Rousseau believed borders were an artificial creation, famously critiquing private land ownership, saying, "The first man who, having enclosed a piece of land, thought of saying, 'This is mine,' and found people simple enough to believe him, was the true founder of civil society." He argued that land disputes arise from inequality, not nature. Karl Marx saw land ownership as a major source of inequality, believe it or not. He argued that throughout history, the ruling class have exploited workers who didn't have any land, and in communist society, land would belong to the people collectively, not private owners or empires. Nietzsche, in The Will to Power, saw political and territorial struggles as natural expressions of the will to power or the drive to dominate and assert control. He viewed moral arguments about land ownership as being disguises for raw power struggle. Weil, recently, Simone Weil, The Tragedy of Rootlessness, Weil explored how wars and conquests uproot people from their homelands, creating suffering and alienation. She argued that modern political systems should focus on giving people a deep sense of belonging rather than just controlling territory. So many of these thinkers saw territorial control as temporary. Many of them saw conflict over land as natural. Many thought of the idea of property being questionable, and still many thought that justice matters more than territory. So, what would they say today about a land acknowledgement, about making a land acknowledgement? Going back to this idea that it's a statement recognizing that land was originally inhabited and stewarded by indigenous people before being colonized would certainly get a lot of different responses. So Rousseau would probably think that the concept of land ownership and that the land acknowledgments highlight the original injustice that colonizers or settlers took land by force and imposed ownership structures that were not natural. But he also might say that acknowledgement alone is not enough. It should be tied to action, such as returning land or granting indigenous self-government. Locke, since he believed that land belongs to those who cultivate and improve it, he also argued that land theft is unjust. He might acknowledge that many indigenous groups were dispossessed unfairly and that modern societies have a moral duty to address past wrong. But his logic might also be used against land acknowledgement, since he believed that whoever currently improves the land has a right to it. Marx would certainly support land acknowledgement as part of a broader critique of capitalism and colonialism. I think that he would likely demand more than symbolic acknowledgement. He would want land redistribution and systemic change. While the most recent thinker believed that a deep connection to the place is essential for human well-being, she would likely see land acknowledgments as valuable for recognizing the emotional and cultural damage caused by displacement. But she might argue that merely acknowledging past wrongs is not enough. It should lead to policies that restore communities' ability to be rooted in their homelands. Hobbes, the idea that power defines land ownership, he believed that might makes right. Whoever controls the land now by force or governments is its rightful owner. He might see land acknowledgments as unnecessary sentimentalism because, in his view, history is full of violent takeovers and power determines reality. He might argue that rather than focusing on the past, society should concentrate on maintaining stability and avoiding further conflict. Nietzsche might argue that land acknowledgement are a form of historical guilt that does not change power dynamics. He might critique them as performative morality, a way for institutions to appear ethical without giving up power. He might instead encourage indigenous groups to assert power in new ways rather than relying on symbolic recognition. That's interesting. Aristotle valued stability in society and might question whether acknowledging past land ownership has any practical value at all. He might argue that society should focus on governing justly now rather than dwelling on past conquests. However, since he believed in virtue and fairness, he might still support policies that help historically displaced communities to thrive. And in the middle, you find Plato, who might support land acknowledgments in principle. He believed justice is important and society should be governed by morally enlightened rulers, but it's also deeply pragmatic, and he might ask whether land acknowledgments lead to actual justice or they're just symbolic. He might suggest that if land acknowledgments don't lead to material change, they're just rhetoric. Khaldun might likely view land acknowledgments through the lens of his cycle of empire theories. He might say that all civilizations rise, conquer, and decline, and that indigenous displacement is part of that historical process. That's interesting, isn't it? All civilizations rise, conquer, and decline. But he might also argue that dominant societies eventually decay when they lose their founding values. So perhaps ignoring past injustices weakens them. It's possible that Rousseau, Marx, and Weil would likely see land acknowledgments as a necessary step toward justice, but would demand real action. Hobbes and Nietzsche would probably dismiss them as symbolic gestures with no real power. Plato and Aristotle and Khaldun might view them as useful only if they lead to meaningful social or political change. Ultimately, many of the thinkers would simply ask, are any of these things just words, or do they lead? Are all of them just words, or do they lead to real reparations or policy changes? Do they empower indigenous communities, or do they mainly serve the conscience of those in power? Is land ownership ever truly permanent, or is power just a continuous reshuffling of power? Is history just a continuous reshuffling of power? So what do you think about all that? What do you think about it? My initial response to land acknowledgement is that they're silly, is that they're very performative. It's just a form of virtue signaling. But going through and learning about what the world's religions say and think about these, but more so what those philosophers and great thinkers have to say about these things, I find value and insight, certainly, in all of them that I learned about. And I also know that all that we can do is be just in our own time. I can't go backwards and undo things that have been done. And even if I were, I would have to go and undo other people's work as well, because going through those historical examples, some of these pieces of land have changed hands dozens of times, if not, I guess dozens would be the appropriate term. So it's an interesting thing. It's an interesting thing. But certainly, if you have a desire to make a land acknowledgement or any kind of an acknowledgement, then it's your right to do just that. What do you think? I'd love to hear from you. Love to know what your thoughts on this are. And as always, do your part, doing your best.